This episode is sponsored by the AAPCA3, the American Academy of Pediatrics, California Chapter 3, San Diego, and Imperial Counties. The AAPCA3 would like to highlight Project Firstline, a CDC National Healthcare Workforce Infection Prevention and Control Training Collaborative. As a Project Firstline partner, the AAP serves as a virtual training center on infection prevention and control. I recently watched Game of Thrones, and of course, I was like, oh, that's why everyone was talking about this. You know those things that are big in the news or in pop culture, and you didn't really pay that much attention to them, but then you experience it, and you're like, oh, dang, I had no idea. Maybe I should follow trends more closely, because things do trend for a reason. Like when people tell you you're going to understand something when you're older, and then you get older, and you're like, oh, why was I fighting my nap all those years? They're right, naps are awesome. You've had a moment when you missed out and then realized later what the hype was all about. This is a long-winded way to say I had this happen once with a patient, and that's what I'm talking about today. I had always heard this one particular disease is really bad, and that's why we vaccinate for it, but I hadn't ever seen a case, so I didn't really pay that much attention to the disease's symptoms or how to handle it if I ever saw a case. And then I had a patient with the disease and I was like, oh, dang, that's why people get so bajiggity about this. I'm talking about measles. It's all over the news right now. And I think a lot of people, including doctors, aren't that concerned about it. They're like, okay, yeah, let's keep an eye out. I'm not really sure why this is such a big deal, but hold on, because I'm about to tell you why measles is a big deal and why you need to care. I'm Dr. Wendy Hunter. And I'm the pediatrician next door. I'm that doctor friend you call for practical advice about your kid's health. I mix the science of medicine with the reality of parenting. It was more than 10 years ago that I took care of a patient with measles, but I will never forget what patients with measles look like. You may have heard in the news to look for a high fever and rash along with conjunctivitis, but lots of kids have these kind of symptoms and they don't have measles. When I walked into this exam room and saw this three-year-old, it was unmistakable. She looked so sick. The child had been referred to the emergency room where I was working because she was very ill, but she was also known to have been exposed to a measles patient in the waiting room at her doctor's office. My patient was there for her well child check at the same time that a seven-year-old who had just traveled to Switzerland was in the office with a fever, which turned out to be measles. Measles is more contagious than most any other illness. If you're in a room and you aren't vaccinated, there is a 90% chance that you will get the virus, even if you're in the room up to 2 hours later. That's how long the virus particles can stay suspended in the air, and it infects just about everyone it comes into contact with. The clinic did contact tracing, and that's how my patient knew she had been exposed. She was in quarantine at home and then got sick about 7 days after she was exposed in the waiting room. By the time I saw her, it was 2 weeks after her exposure, and she was dehydrated and whimpering, and her face was just pouring with runny nose and watery eyes. It was one of the most startling things I've ever seen. Her rash was like no rash I had seen before. She was on fire with rash. She ended up staying in the hospital to get IV fluids. And this all made sense in terms of the timeline because the incubation period is typically like 11 to 12 days from exposure to symptoms starting. But it can be as early as 7 days or as long as 21 days in some rare cases. That's why a kid can be perfectly healthy and fly home from their European vacation and then get sick when they get home and spread it to everyone. Plus, symptoms are basically going to look like a cold for the first few days. Then a horrific rash appears like 3 to 4 days after the first symptoms start, but it can be as long as a full week after they first get a runny nose and fever. I saw this kid in the emergency room. Her mom had called her pediatrician, and the pediatrician sent the girl to the ER instead of seeing her in the clinic because it's best to keep kids in an isolation room with negative pressure that pulls the air directly out of the room outside rather than have the air circulate with other patient rooms. We have these kind of rooms in most emergency rooms in this country, but your general clinic is not going to have one of these rooms. Remember, this is a very contagious disease. If you've ever been to your pediatrician's office when your child has a rash and a fever, Your clinic should ask you to wait outside rather than wait in the waiting room. We've had parents get really offended or upset when our front office staff has asked a family to wait outside, but we have to be vigilant. If just one case of measles slips through, it can mean an outbreak for many children. So if you take your child to the doctor because they have a rash and a fever at the same time, and they don't ask you to wait outside, or at least ask you to put on a mask, that's when you should be upset. And that's when you should say something to the office staff. Anyone who is vaccinated should be protected against getting the disease, but there are a few people who don't make immunity. Sometimes they've gotten two shots, which is the recommended number, and they just don't become immune. But there was also a period of time when researchers were trying to figure out the optimal timing for which ages to give the measles vaccine so that it would generate good immunity. If you were born roughly between 1965 and 1989, kids were routinely only given one dose. Public health officials monitored outbreaks and they evaluated who got measles, and they moved the vaccine from 9 months up to 15 months of age. But vaccinated people were still getting measles sometimes. So in 1989, that's when they added a booster dose. So there were teenagers roaming the planet in the late 1980s who thought they were protected from measles by their one single dose, but they weren't. I heard this firsthand account from Greg. He had the measles as a teenager. He thinks he got it at a movie theater because he started getting cold symptoms about a week later and he hadn't really been anywhere else. Here's his experience.
When I was a sophomore in high school, I got sick in the spring. It started out with just like, felt like I had a cold symptoms. I had fever for a period of time and I developed a rash. Then that rash developed and went into my throat and it became really, really hard for me to swallow. So I ended up getting really dehydrated because I couldn't eat or drink anything. I guess I got really dehydrated and my temperature spiked. I went to see my pediatrician, or I think I had a fever of 100. I'd seen my pediatrician already while during this time once or twice, and he wasn't exactly sure what was going on. My fever spiked, I'm pretty sure it was over 105. So he got me into Rady. When we showed up and they took my temperature, I got in a wheelchair because I really couldn't walk at the time. They took my temperature and they had my fever and they immediately moved me into quarantine where they started me on IV fluids, but everybody who came into the room was wearing a like hazmat suit and because I didn't know what I had and I was really, really sick. They gave me IV fluids and immediately, like it seems like immediately, but my temperature dropped to about 103 something. And I felt on top of the world after that because I felt so sick when my fever was so high. But for about a week, I was in the hospital and my fever wouldn't break. They were giving me Tylenol and all kinds of things. And they were worried about my temperature being so high. So they made me sleep on a bed that had cold water that ran through it, which is an extremely uncomfortable thing to lay in all day. And I think it helped a little bit. But I know that my parents, they told me afterwards that, you know, they didn't know what was going on and I was really sick and the doctors couldn't tell them what was going on. And they had conversations about, you know, they thought they were going to lose me. And they thought about, you know, they talked about it amongst themselves. So it was really traumatic. And I guess that just is a point to say, you know, how sick I was from the measles. Eventually, you know, at some point, this was in early 1990, spring of 1990. And there was a measles epidemic, but that was the very beginning of it. So the hospital, they didn't really recognize it. At some point, an older doctor who was significantly older than the rest of the doctors I had seen, he was probably in his 60s, but in my mind, he was older than that. But he walked into the room and took one look at me and said, "This kid has the measles. He's going to be okay. And, you know, just keep him hydrated." And then they moved me after that diagnosis. I'd been in there for a while in quarantine. They moved me out of quarantine and I was in the hospital, I think a total of 3 weeks. I missed 6 or 8 weeks of school total. So it was pretty significant. I was vaccinated as a baby for measles. I did have my measles vaccine. My understanding is that I was in a in a group of people of an age group where they'd move the vaccine up to an earlier age from what it was originally. Like they moved it from a year to 6 months. I don't know the exact numbers. And then they didn't give a booster again at 18 months. And so now, or after, in literally like a year afterwards, they changed the guidelines. So they still gave the earlier measles vaccine and then they gave a booster later. So I was one of the people who only got the single one as an infant, which I share because I think it's just shows that it's really important to follow the vaccination schedules. They exist for a reason and they're understood. After I got better from the measles, I developed paralysis in my left hand, which is today it's would be diagnosed as acute flaccid myelitis. It's paralysis in my left hand. It persists today. So I've had it for over 30 years now. And my left hand is extremely weak compared to my right hand. And, you know, it's caused by a virus that's not the polio virus. But I do think that given the timing of the two, that the two are related, that either I had the effects of the other virus that caused the nerve damage because I had the measles, or I got the measles because I already had the other virus that my body was fighting off. So I do think the things or two are related.
And now a word from our sponsor, AAPCA3, the American Academy of Pediatrics, California Chapter 3, San Diego and Imperial Counties, is raising awareness about the CDC's Project First Line.
Working on the front lines of healthcare, you have experienced the realities of the COVID-19 pandemic in ways few can understand. You're working harder than ever to protect your patients, coworkers, and yourselves. And you deserve infection control education and training designed just for you. That's why we developed Project First Line. Because preventing infections is a top priority for everyone. It's why you train. It's why you prepare. It's why you work together as a team. If you stay vigilant and take action to stop the spread of germs, with every person, every action, every day, you make healthcare safer for your patients, your coworkers, and yourself. Project First Line is here to support you as you learn and train. We have the power to stop infections together. We have the power to save lives. Project First Line offers free infection control training resources developed with healthcare workers for healthcare workers.
Greg's experience of having the measles makes the point that measles rash is not like anything you'll ever see with any other disease. That's why that old doctor recognized it immediately. I had the same experience when I saw measles up close. The other startling thing about this story is that he went in and out of his pediatrician's office a couple of times when he was really contagious. This is a disease that can hide. It looks like any other cold for the first few days, and a patient is contagious during those 4 days before the rash starts until about 4 days into the rash. So by the time a kid is really sick and you can tell they have the measles, it's too late to prevent spreading it. That's why our only reliable prevention is to vaccinate everybody. Greg's story also shows how common complications are. He doesn't know whether the paralysis in his left arm is from measles or if he had a polio-like virus around the same time and it's just a coincidence. I haven't seen that single limb paralysis is a reported complication of measles. On the other hand, encephalitis is common. Encephalitis is inflammation of the brain that can result in permanent brain damage, and it happens in one in every 1,000 to 2,000 cases of measles. And the measles death rate is high too, 2 to 3 deaths for every 1,000 cases of measles. For comparison, the death rate last year for influenza was 1 case per 100,000 cases. Compare that to the 2 to 3 deaths per 1,000 with measles. Measles can also cause something called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis, or SSPE. This is a progressive neurologic disorder that starts showing symptoms 7 to 10 years after you've recovered from the initial primary measles virus infection. It's very strange. SSPE manifests as mental and motor deterioration, which can progress to coma and death. It occurs in about one in every 5,000 cases of measles. And rates are higher among children who are under 5 years of age when they get the measles. So now it's starting to make sense why there are so many news stories about measles right now. Cases are really high this year, and it can turn into an outbreak very quickly if you're talking about a population of people who are not well vaccinated. You also know now that you don't want to get measles. How do you avoid it? It starts with having a population of people who can't spread the disease. But I'll tell you, there are classrooms of kids where only half the kids are vaccinated. And there are schools where virtually everyone in the school is vaccinated, but 3 out of 100 kids aren't going to make immunity from their vaccine. Those kids can get the measles. The current recommendation is for a child to get their first measles, mumps, rubella vaccine just after they turn 1 year old. Back in the early 1960s, when the vaccine was given under 12 months, babies didn't make lifelong immunity because they still had some of their mother's measles immunoglobulin in their blood from birth, and that interfered with the baby making their own long-lasting immunity. After it was found out that babies need to be over 12 months, we learned that most of them need a booster. The booster works just as well if you give it 1 month after the first dose, but doctors found that kids were more likely to get the booster if it was given at the same time as their other required vaccines. So they changed it to age 4 to 5 when they start kindergarten. So that's why we give the booster then. However, if you are traveling outside of the United States and your child is over 12 months old, they can get both doses now, as long as those doses are 28 days apart, and the child will then be protected the best this way. If you do this, they will not need a booster when they turn 4. This dose counts. The first dose of vaccine is 93% effective at preventing the measles, and giving the second dose means that 97% of kids will make immunity. That's why Greg got the measles. He only had that one dose, and it's only 93% effective. If your child is between 6 and 12 months of age and you're planning to travel out of the country, we do recommend getting one dose and then getting 2 more doses after they turn a year. Okay, what if you're a grandparent? If you were born before 1957, you are presumed to have been exposed because everyone got the measles back then, and you don't need a measles vaccine at all. You have natural immunity. Our first line of defense is vaccinating everyone. What is our next step in preventing measles outbreaks? It's being careful to watch for cases when they do happen. Here, Dr. Joelle Oedman, a pediatric ER doctor, tells the story of how cases can go unnoticed.
I remember I had a case in Fresno, and I walked in and there was an ER room that had 6 patients and all the beds are just separated by curtains. And I remember I just had this kid. I was like, I'm just going to screen him and then go back and I'll go get more history. And I remember walking up to this kid and looking and going, watery red conjunctivitis eyes. That looks sniffly. And that is an impressive rash. And from like 10 feet away, I asked the mom, hey, does your kid have a fever right now? And the mom's like, yes. And this was pre-COVID days. I backed up and grabbed a mask and went straight to the nursing station and went, you need to get everyone out of that room and you need to isolate and lock it down. We're working up for measles. And it was measles. And then we had to contact trace everyone that kid had exposed in the ER for the 2-hour period before and after. We had one kid from San Diego that ended up getting hospitalized and had fever for 21 days in a row. That you can get ear infections, pneumonia. And the treatment's really weird because the treatment is vitamin A. And you know how I had to look up the treatment for measles? Because we'd had such a high vaccination rate, our measles cases got so, so low. Like none, right? So when we got measles, where did I have to turn to for treatment? The World Health Organization. Because you know who sees measles and treats measles? Third world countries that don't have vaccines available to them.
Again here, Dr. Oedman's experience is that the rash is not like anything you've ever seen before. You can tell from 10 feet away that a person has measles, but sometimes not until it's too late and you've already exposed an entire ER full of healthcare workers and patients, most of whom who are vaccinated and they won't need to quarantine. But if you're not vaccinated and you're in contact, you will be quarantined for 21 days. The symptoms to look for are high fever, and that can be as high as 105, a cough, runny nose, and red watery eyes. The very distinct rash starts on the forehead, and then it spreads down the face, neck, and trunk. It doesn't appear all over the body all at once like some other rashes do. There's also a unique rash that appears inside the mouth. It looks kind of like grains of sand. I saw those spots myself in my patient. They're white or blue spots with a little red halo around them, and they appear the day before the rash. If your child has a rash and fever at the same time, be sure to call and talk to a triage nurse or a doctor at your clinic before you go into the ER or any clinic. A fever that breaks and is followed by a rash, that's very common and not a big deal. So this really applies to having a rash and fever at the same time. If you are the triage nurse or the doctor taking a call about rash and fever, first, you need to be aware of whether any measles cases have been reported in your community because you're going to be more suspicious about measles in that case. Next, you need to ask whether the patient has been out of the country in the 21 days before their symptoms started. And last, you need to know if the patient is vaccinated for measles. If you're going to the clinic with your child because they have a rash and fever, you should not go in the main entrance and you should call the office when you arrive. And your child should be wearing a mask if they're over age 2. Ideally, if a patient is thought to have measles and needs to be seen by a doctor, they really should go to a facility that has airborne infection isolation rooms, like an emergency department. When I saw my patient in the ER, I knew I was immune because I had my titers drawn when I entered residency, and I knew I was fully vaccinated. I also wore a specially fitted mask and gown and gloves. The other key thing to know is that anyone who is suspected to have measles needs to be reported immediately to the health department. And the health department can help get the patient tested for measles and provide contact tracing. Why do scientists and researchers care so much about measles right now? It's because they track outbreaks. And over the past 5 years, the average number of cases in the first 3 months of the year has been 5 measles cases in the U.S., and those cases have been entirely in unvaccinated people returning from international travel. In comparison, in the first 3 months of this year, 2024, there have been close to 100 cases. And that is very worrisome to the epidemiologists who track this information. This data virtually guarantees we're going to see an outbreak this year because the vaccination rate dropped when kids didn't go to the doctor during COVID for their routine vaccines. And we're expecting to see a lot more families travel abroad to countries that have higher rates of measles this summer. Make sure your kids are vaccinated with the MMR. If you're traveling, ask your pediatrician about whether your child needs a vaccine or a booster. And you're going to want to get this done about 6 weeks before travel in case your child needs 2 doses. It takes 2 weeks after a vaccine to develop immunity. So you're going to need that much lead time if you need 2 doses. Please, do not be worried about side effects of this vaccine. The most compelling thing I can tell you is that the MMR does not cause autism. That's just ridiculous and it's based on lies. The only real risk is a febrile seizure. About 1 child in 4,000 doses of vaccine might have a seizure, and this type of seizure does not cause any lasting problems. But if you get measles, it's much more common to have a seizure. 1 in 1,000 cases of kids who get measles will have brain swelling and seizures that do have lasting consequences. Also, the single measles vaccine is not available in the U.S. You can only get it in a combo as the MMR, which protects against mumps and rubella at the same time. I promise you don't want to get mumps or rubella either. I've seen those too. And this way, when you get this shot, you only need 1 shot instead of 3 pokes. So, that's why the news is making a big deal of measles right now. Just ask Greg. He'll tell you it was pretty awful and it's not worth the risk of not being vaccinated. And now you also know how to be vigilant. For more from the Pediatrician Next Door, find me on the web at pediatriciannextdoorpodcast.com. If you've got a question about the weird things kids do, send an email to hello@pediatriciannextdoorpodcast.com for a chance to hear your voice on the show. I'm Dr. Wendy Hunter, and I'm the Pediatrician Next Door. This show is produced by Red Rock Music. Make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever it is you're listening. I'll be back next time with more.